Chapter 49. Before contemplation of her fear should have preyed too deeply upon her. Cytherea, apostrophe he said, this will not do. You must stay here alone all the afternoon, whilst I go to Carriford. I shall know all when I return. Apostrophe apostrophe, no, no, don't go. Apostrophe apostrophe she implored. Soon, then, not directly. Apostrophe apostrophe he saw her subtle reasoning, that it was folly to be wise. Reflection still convinced him that good would come of persevering in his intention, and dispelling his sister's idle fears. Anything was better than this absurd doubt in her mind. But he resolved to wait till Sunday, the first day on which he might reckon upon seeing Mrs. Manston without suspicion. In the meantime he wrote to Edward Springrove, requesting him to go again to Mrs. Manston's former lodgings. XVIII. The events of 3 days. 1. March the 18th, Sunday morning had come, and Owen was trudging over the 6 miles of hill and dale that lay between Tolchurch and Carriford. Edward Springrove's answer to the last letter, after expressing his amazement at the strange contradiction between the verses and Mrs. Morris's letter, had been to the effect that he had again visited the neighbor of the dead Mr. Brown, and had received as near a description of Mrs. Manston as it was possible to get at second hand, and by hearsay. She was a tall woman, wide at the shoulders, and full-chested, and as he had a straight and rather large nose. The color of her eyes the informant did not know, for as he had only seen the lady in the street as she went in or out. This confusing remark was added. The woman had almost recognized Mrs. Manston when she had called with her husband lately, but as he had kept her veil down. Her residence, before she came to Hoxton, was quite unknown to this next-door neighbor, and Edward could get no manner of clue to it from any other source. Owen reached the church door a few minutes before the bells began chiming. Nobody was yet in the church, and he walked round the aisles. From Cytherea's frequent description of how and where herself and others used to sit, he knew where to look for Manston's seat. And after 2 or 3 errors of examination he took up a prayer book in which was written Eunice Manston. Apostrophe apostrophe the book was nearly new, and the date of the writing about a month earlier. One point was at any rate established. That the woman living with Manston was presented to the world as no other than his lawful wife. The quiet villagers of Carriford required no pew opener in their place of worship. Natives and indwellers had their own seats, and strangers sat where they could. Gray took a seat in the nave, on the north side, close behind a pillar dividing it from the north aisle, which was completely allotted to Miss Aldcliffe, her farmers, and her retainers, Manston's pew being in the midst of them. Owen's position on the other side of the passage was a little in advance of Manston's seat, and so situated that by leaning forward he could look directly into the face of any person sitting there, though, if he sat upright, he was wholly hidden from such a one by the intervening pillar. Aiming to keep his presence unknown to Manston if possible, Owen sat, without once turning his head, during the entrance of the congregation. A rustling of silk round by the north passage, and into Manston's seat, told him that some woman had entered there, and as it seemed from the accompaniment of heavier footsteps, Manston was with her. Immediately upon rising up, he looked intently in that direction, and saw a lady standing at the end of the seat nearest himself. Portions of Manston's figure appeared on the other side of her. In 2 glances Gray read thus many of her characteristics, and in the following order. She was a tall woman. She was broad at the shoulders. She was full-bosomed. She was easily recognizable from the photograph, but nothing could be discerned of the color of her eyes. With a preoccupied mind he withdrew into his nook, and heard the service continued only conscious of the fact that in opposition to the suspicion which one odd circumstance had bred in his sister concerning this woman, all ostensible and ordinary proofs and probabilities tended to the opposite conclusion. There sat the genuine original of the portrait. Could he wish for more? Cytherea wished for more. Eunice Manston's eyes were blue, and it was necessary that this woman's eyes should be blue also. Unskilled labor wastes in beating against the bars 10 times the energy exerted by the practiced hand in the effective direction. Owen felt this to be the case in his own, and Edward's attempts to follow up the clue afforded them. Think as he might, he could not think of a crucial test in the matter absorbing him, which should possess the indispensable attribute, a capability of being applied privately, that in the event of its proving the lady to be the rightful owner of the name she used, he might recede without obloquy from an untenable position. But to see Mrs. Manston's eyes from where he sat was impossible, and he could do nothing in the shape of a direct examination at present. Miss Aldclyffe had possibly recognized him, but Manston had not, and feeling that it was indispensable to keep the purport of his visit a secret from the steward, he thought it would be as well to keep his presence in the village a secret from him, at any rate, till the day was over. At the first opening of the doors, Gray left the church and wandered away into the fields, to ponder on another scheme. He could not call on Farmer Springrove, as he had intended, until this matter was set at rest. 2 hours intervened between the morning and afternoon services. This time had nearly expired before Owen had struck out any method of proceeding, or could decide to run the risk of calling at the old house and asking to see Mrs. Manston point blank. But he had drawn near the place, and was standing still in the public path, from which a partial view of the front of the building could be obtained, when the bells began chiming for afternoon service. Whilst Gray paused, two persons came from the front door of the half-hidden dwelling whom he presently saw to be Manston and his wife. Manston was wearing his old garden hat, and carried one of the monthly magazines under his arm. Immediately they had passed the gateway he branched off, and went over the hill in a direction away from the church, evidently intending to ramble along, and read as the humor moved him. The lady meanwhile turned in the other direction, and went into the church path. Owen resolved to make something of this opportunity. He hurried along towards the church, doubled round a sharp angle, and came back upon the other path, by which Mrs. Manston must arrive. In about 3 minutes she appeared in sight without a veil. He discovered, as she drew near, a difficulty which had not struck him at first, that it is not an easy matter to particularize the color of a stranger's eyes in a merely casual encounter on a path out of doors. That Mrs. Manston must be brought close to him, and not only so, but to look closely at him, if his purpose were to be accomplished. He shaped a plan. It might by chance be effectual. If otherwise, it would not reveal his intention to her. When Mrs. Manston was within speaking distance, he went up to her, and said, "Will you kindly tell me which turning will take me to Casterbridge?" The second on the right, said Mrs. Manston. Owen put on a blank look. He held his hand to his ear, conveying to the lady the idea that he was deaf. She came closer, and said more distinctly, "The second turning on the right." Owen flushed a little. He fancied he had beheld the revelation he was in search of. But had his eyes deceived him? Once more he used the ruse, still drawing nearer and intimating by a glance that the trouble he gave her was very distressing to him. "How very deaf!" she murmured. She exclaimed loudly, "The second turning to the right." As he had advanced her face to within a foot of his own, and in speaking mouthed very emphatically, fixing her eyes intently upon his. And now his first suspicion was indubitably confirmed. Her eyes were as black as midnight. All this feigning was most distasteful to Gray. The riddle having been solved, he unconsciously assumed his natural look, before she had withdrawn her face. She found him to be peering at her, as if he would read her very soul, expressing with his eyes the notification of which, apart from emotion, the eyes are more capable than any other inquiry. Her face changed its expression, then its color. The natural tint of the lighter portion sank to an ashy gray. The pink of her cheeks grew purpler. It was the precise result which would remain after blood had left the face of one whose skin was dark and artificially coated with pearl powder and carmine. She turned her head and moved away, murmuring a hasty reply to Owen's farewell remark of good day, apostrophe, and with a kind of nervous twitch lifting her hand and smoothing her hair, which was of a light brown color. She wears false hair, apostrophe, he thought, or has changed its color artificially. Her true hair matched her eyes. Apostrophe, and now, in spite of what Mr. Brown's neighbors had said about nearly recognizing Mrs. Manston on her recent visit, which might have meant anything or nothing, in spite of the photograph, and in spite of his previous incredulity, in consequence of the verse, of her silence and backwardness at the visit to Hoxton with Manston, and of her appearance and distress at the present moment, Gray had a conviction that the woman was an impostor. What could be Manston's reason for such an astounding trick he could by no stretch of imagination divine? He changed his direction, as soon as the woman was out of sight, and plodded along the lanes homeward to Tolchurch. One new idea was suggested to him by his desire to allay Cytherea's dread of being claimed, and by the difficulty of believing that the first Mrs. Manston lost her life as supposed, notwithstanding the inquest and verdict. Was it possible that the real Mrs. Manston, who was known to be a Philadelphian by birth, had returned by the train to London, as the porter had said, and then left the country under an assumed name, to escape that worst kind of widowhood, the misery of being wedded to a fickle, faithless, and truant husband? In her complicated distress at the news brought by her brother, Cytherea's thoughts at length reverted to her friend, the rector of Carriford. She told Owen of Mr. Ronham's warm-hearted behavior towards herself, and of his strongly expressed wish to aid her. He is not only a good, but a sensible man. We seem to want an old head on our side. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and he is a magistrate, apostrophe, said Owen in a tone of concurrence. He thought, too, that no harm could come of confiding in the rector, but there was a difficulty in bringing about the confidence. He wished that his sister and himself might both be present at an interview with Mr. Ronham, yet it would be unwise for them to call on him together, in the sight of all the servants and parish of Carriford. There could be no objection to their writing him a letter. No sooner was the thought born than it was carried out. They wrote to him at once, asking him to have the goodness to give them some advice they sadly needed, and begging that he would accept their assurance that there was a real justification for the additional request they made, that instead of their calling upon him, he would any evening of the week come to their cottage at Tolchurch. 2. March the 20th. 6 to 9 o'clock p.m. Two evenings later, to the total disarrangement of his dinner hour, Mr. Ronham appeared at Owen's door. His arrival was hailed with genuine gratitude. The horse was tied to the palings, and the rector ushered indoors and put into the easy chair. Then Gray told him the whole story, reminding him that their first suspicions had been of a totally different nature, and that in endeavoring to obtain proof of their truth they had stumbled upon marks which had surprised them into these new uncertainties, thrice as marvelous as the first, yet more prominent. Cytherea's heart was so full of anxiety that it superinduced a manner of confidence which was a death blow to all formality. Mr. Ronham took her hand pityingly. It is a serious charge, apostrophe, he said, as a sort of original twig on which his thoughts might precipitate themselves. Assuming for a moment that such a substitution was rendered an easy matter by fortuitous events, apostrophe, he continued, there is this consideration, to be placed beside it, what earthly motive can Mr. Manston have had which would be sufficiently powerful to lead him to run such a very great risk? The most abandoned row could not, at that particular crisis, have taken such a reckless step for the mere pleasure of a new companion. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Owen had seen that difficulty about the motive, Cytherea had not. Unfortunately for us, apostrophe the rector resumed, no more evidence is to be obtained from the porter, Chinny. I suppose you know what became of him? He got to Liverpool and embarked, intending to work his way to America, but on the passage he fell overboard and was drowned. But there is no doubt of the truth of his confession. In fact, his conduct tends to prove it true, and no moral doubt of the fact that the real Mrs. Manston left here to go back by that morning's train. This being the case, then, why, if this woman is not she, did she take no notice of the advertisement? I mean not necessarily a friendly notice, but from the information it afforded her of rendered it impossible that she should be personified without her own connivance? Apostrophe apostrophe, I think that argument is overthrown, apostrophe Gray said. By my earliest assumption of her hatred of him, weariness of the chain which bound her to him, and a resolve to begin the world anew. Let's suppose as he has married another man somewhere abroad, say, she would be silent for her own sake. Apostrophe apostrophe, you've hit the only genuine possibility, apostrophe said Mr. Ronham, tapping his finger upon his knee. That would decidedly dispose of the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.